Underpants.
That's right. But they're fresh, international. Now, with no tariffs. Well, as long as you're not sending them to the United States. Hey, everyone. Welcome to The Big Show. I'm your host, Jeff Gamet. And with me today are three brilliant people, which is good because it raises the overall IQ from mine to this. So it's much better. Basically, so we're what at I'm two saying now? Is we're at two. Yeah. I guess what I'm saying is I need handlers. And so here they are. Speaking of my handlers, Patrice, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. It's been a nice week. I went flying on Sunday. It's already been that long that I'm like, did I fly? Yeah, it's like I went flying on Sunday. It was fun. After like 4 weeks almost, so yay. Had class on yesterday. So I repeated because I've done that class before last year. A lot of like navigation and flight planning and so on. It was good repetition. Mm-hmm. Doing that right now. Went to got a haircut today. Stuff like that. So it's been a good week. I'm getting ready for our big trade fair next week. So going to Berlin next week.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So good day.
Awesome. Tom, how about you?
I'm kind of working through a crisis. My coffee maker was starting to die. So I ordered a new one before it completely died. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The new one arrived Friday, and it was broken.
Oh no.
Physically broken. Shit. A little coupler that takes the water from the tank and mm-hmm. sprays it over the coffee was just broken.
Hmm.
And so I spent the last 5 days, starting Monday, last 4 days, each and every day I call Cuisinart, I explain the situation, I have to take a picture, show them the broken part.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, it basically in every step, I had to call to move it to the next step.
Oh.
So the first step is you report it broken. You don't mm-hmm. hear anything. You call them and they say, oh, just take a picture, blah, blah, blah. Do that. Take a picture. And if the picture looks like it's broken, it validates it, we'll send you a new one.
Mm-hmm.
But every step to move it along, I had to call. And when I would call within...
That's horrible.
Within seconds, magically, the next step would happen. So basically, things wait in the queue until you call the next time.
That's prioritization by phone call, I guess.
Right. And the unfortunate thing is the people on the phone were super nice. They were super helpful. They got things done in 10 mm-hmm. seconds. It's just the automated stuff didn't work with the crap.
Yeah, but that's not good customer service, right? Because
no, it's
not at all. The solution would have been, it's broken. Okay, you will have a new one tomorrow.
Right.
Done.
That's exactly the right
end of discussion, end of process.
And of course, you know, economically, it costs them more to have me ship back the broken machine.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically said, you don't have to send it back. But to make sure that I'm not going to rip them off or something, I had to send them a picture after I cut the power cord to prove that I wasn't going to use it.
Oh, thinking, my God.
But it's broken. This, you weren't going to use it anyhow.
Yeah. Right. A, this is kind of stupid. I already sent you the picture of the broken coupler.
Yeah.
And B, if I was trying to scam you, I could just cut it and then just solder it. Power plug back on.
Yeah, just part
new plug back
new,
on. Yeah.
New cable done. Like, well, it's like, right. Wow.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, okay, whatever and, you say. So and, I sent him and I with, sent him a picture.
Yeah. With AI today, you could probably just fake that. They
oh,
would
yes.
So here's the...
Wouldn't even blink, probably.
Here's the cut power cord. I had to send him a picture of this cut power cord to prove it.
What the hell?
I mean, in the US, surely you can buy ones that you can wire yourself. You can go to the hardware store.
Yeah, sure.
It's easy.
I mean, I have a pair of wire strippers. I could have just not even soldered it, just twisted it back and put some electrical tape over it. It would have been fun.
Yeah. Jesus.
Anyway. So,
well, the important question.
Yes.
Do you at least still have the ability to make some coffee?
So because the problem with the original problem was the mechanism to boil the water and get the water up into the sprayer wasn't working. Mm-hmm. So now what I do is I put the pot in, put coffee in the basket, boil some water in my kettle, and then do a pour over.
You do a pour over.
Into the coffee machine.
Wow.
So I have to do that until next Wednesday when the next machine arrives.
Hopefully that and one isn't broken.
I hope not. You know, I drink a pot of coffee every day, so it's important. It's a crisis.
Yeah, I don't drink coffee simply because I've never liked the taste.
Mm.
But I can appreciate the stress you're going through when my electric kettle died.
Yeah, right. Like, same problem.
And I had a tea bag ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And
kettle's broken.
And I go to start it and it just doesn't work. And I'm like, oh, but this is how I do this. Yeah. And now, yes, I was able to address the problem by doing the blasphemy, according to some people, of putting water in the microwave.
That is blasphemy. You should have, the proper way would have been put a pot on the stove, heat it up.
Right. Right.
If I've taken a picture of what my kitchen was, I'll find it and I'll send it to you. And then you'll see why I just microwaved instead.
So I
had what I called a Barbie Easy Bake Oven for a stove.
Yeah.
The kitchen of my old place, swear to the Lords of Cobalt, had been a bathroom.
So say we all.
Wow.
So say we all.
I had an apartment like that.
And that was it.
I had an apartment like that. There was like a sink and a toilet in a separate room. And right next to it was the kitchen that they had put in after the fact. So the shower was actually in the kitchen and you could literally go into the room and it was it was under the roof. So like the room was anyway, kind of, there was a window and whatever, like all of that. And you could go in, turn around and walk out. That was it.
Yeah. That's basically how my little kitchen space was.
Yeah.
They couldn't even fit a regular size fridge. It was like three quarters height.
Yeah.
Because of the slope. Mm-hmm. And, I mean,
I managed to boil water.
But I bet your stove worked reliably.
I mean, there was no stove. I had like one of those like countertop like
hot plate.
Yeah, but it worked. I was a student. Well, I didn't care.
Well, I did microwave that day, but thanks to Amazon, I had a new electric kettle the next day.
Nice.
And I've had that same one for years, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was last fall or so, I noticed for the first time there's actually a power light on it, which I thought was weird that it didn't have one. If you use your electric kettle right-handed, so the handle is on the right side of the pot instead of the left side,
you would see it, right?
You see a light.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea there was a light on my electric kettle.
Yet another example of discrimination against left-handed people.
Yeah, against lefties.
Yep.
When will the madness end?
Yeah. Mine is also discriminating because it has buttons, right? That one of the buttons you press to heat it up, but they're on the front when the handle's on the right. So if you were left-handed, they would be on the back. I mean, you could press them blind. I mean, I never look at the display and like just beep, but still.
Huh. Man, what is it with the, with this discrimination against left-handed people?
Yeah.
Just all over the world.
Yes.
Man.
It's a conspiracy.
It is. Total conspiracy. Yeah. Yeah. No good segue there, so instead I'll just say, Ian, how's it going?
It's going just fine. It's going just fine. This week's been fun. I've been various bits of fighting with Kubernetes, because that's all we ever seem to do with them.
Did that today.
And this is me trying to build a sensible lab for my engineers to kind of teach them the basics. And I kind of make that. It's supposed to be repeatable, but it's actually not. That's the annoying part.
Yes.
And that one side, the last couple of days is kind of interesting stuff today. I'm on the board reviewing our latest certification exam. So this morning I went and took the exam. This afternoon I'm looking at it from the reviewer's eye, and I have the question bank in front of me. And I'm actually, it's a fascinating, I've done a couple of these things over the years for our exams, and it's kind of an interesting peek behind the curtains of how companies, and we work with a company called Alpine that build the exams for us. And it's fascinating, some of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes of how they rate the questions, how they work out whether these questions are too easy, too hard, where we set the baseline of knowledge and all that. And it is, it's an interesting process. I'm always glad to try and sneak my onto the panels. The lady who organises our exam knows I'm usually good for being helpful. And my joy of joys this time round is they've seemed to have got the message from last time I was on the exam writing panel, when I was criticizing all the use of far too many $10 words when $1 words would do. The language and all the questions now were excellent. It is not trial by American for anyone that doesn't live in the States and work in the tech industry. So it's useful, because I try and make sure everything's worded with, I mean, my pet hate being consumer is one of the most annoying words used in IT as a part among many others. Just say use, for crying out loud. It's simpler. Everyone understands. It's not another bit of brain translation you have to do. So that was good. The next bit is now trying to work out why they've got questions for architects and a test that's not for architects. Well, that's a conversation for Monday or Tuesday when I get to the review part, because I've gone through a few questions again. But my guy who's done 2 years of experience doesn't have the skill set yet to really get to the answer to that one properly yet. You know, only half the guys that the whiz kids might, but
yeah,
your Mr. Average has hasn't got a clue, can do the process of it. There was a couple of questions where I got the answer right by process of elimination, not by knowing the answer.
Yeah, but that's also fine.
And that was, yeah. It's
next
fine,
time you'll figure it. Think, next time you will know.
Yeah, that's the idea. So I've been question reviewing. So that's fun and games. But otherwise, week's been fine. Week's been fine. All those kind of other normal things.
Yeah, I was fighting against Kubernetes today too. So. Why did it work yesterday? Why is it not working today? And this is stupid.
Yes, that's my. Most of the thing I'm fighting with is networking, ingress, traffic, ingress, NGINX, all of those things.
Yes.
All I want to see is the web page that I've created inside here. That's all I need to see. I need to see it reproducibly every time I do. I set the service and create the thing. My browser will show me it. It works beautifully if I'm working on the site. If I've got a single instance where I'm working on the local machine, the minute I have a separate cluster and I'm working on a machine connecting to everything, it's an utter nightmare. And it shouldn't be, because I've done everything you needed to have done to make sure it wouldn't be.
Yeah.
And it still is. I will figure it out.
We had like a similar problem today. It's like, so we have a SaaS application, and it's an internal test system. So it's more, for the trade for next week, we need it running today, because like we have to finish preparing for everything. So it was kind of bad timing. Mm-hmm. Worked fine yesterday. Today, none of the tenants are working. They're all throwing their SSL errors at you. Like it's just, and it's not like expired certificates or whatever. It's like literally SSL doesn't work. And we're like, and it's a slightly weird setup because it's like the ingress on the outside just passes through and SSL termination happens on the Nginx on the inside. There's some complexities there. We're like, why is it not working? And you disable the pass-through, it works fine. You enable it, it doesn't work. And I'm like, how is that possible?
Oh, yeah. You need to put another quarter in the SSL.
I think so, yeah. Or just restart everything or something.
Relatively speaking, isn't complicated.
No, it's not. And it worked fine the last, whatever, year and a half. And today it is like, nope. And we couldn't even figure out what changed. And we were like, okay, we'll just disable pass-through for now because it works. And we can do the fair like that. And then like next week, Friday, we can start figuring out what the hell is really going on. That is. You have a website. You put it in Kubernetes. Now I have two problems.
This checks out. Yeah.
And I run everything on Kubernetes. Wrong. Just saying. Like I have two. I have, wait a second. Privately, two clusters, and BTN will be the third soon. And at work, I don't even know how many. It's like 10, 15, something like that. So, yes. It is, yes. We should talk about something more fun.
We should.
Like, how are you doing, Jeff?
How are you doing, man? I believe it's a Norwegian saying, I'm upright and not crying.
Probably, yes.
Which means you're...
Could also be Russian.
Fine. Yeah. Or it could be Russian.
Yeah, that sounds like either of those nationalities. I can understand that one for.
Yeah. I'll ask Christian.
Yeah, there's just, you know, it's all the usual stuff. Had to get through federal and state taxes because April 15th is tax day in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And I had prepared my taxes a few weeks ago. But my standard procedure is if I owe money, then I'm going to print out the documents, write a check, and then mail everything on the 15th so that it just takes that much longer for the government to actually get the money. It's spite, okay, people? I do it out of spite.
Yeah.
But I always do a quick review of my taxes a couple days before. So that was on Monday. I start looking and I'm like, oh my God. The stuff that's not in here, how was all this missed?
And what was I thinking?
What was I thinking? And so I spent all day Monday and all day Tuesday completely redoing my taxes from scratch.
Shit. Yeah.
And it paid off because my overall tax liability turned out to be much lower than what
okay.
my original work showed.
Worth it.
Yeah. So got that done, got that off, and. So
Here we are.
And here we are. And I just realized somehow I got through all of that without alcohol.
Yeah, that's
no
a surprise.
I was so stressed.
That is a surprise.
Yeah.
Must be all that air in Colorado. That's like,
yeah. all the contact high smoke
fresh,
in Colorado.
Exactly. Fresh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure about that.
Yeah. Sometimes the air is fresh, but we also get a lot of smoke from our own forest fires, and then also from wind carrying smoke from out of state into Colorado and from Canada into Colorado. So our fresh air isn't as fresh as it was before the whole planet caught on fire.
Yeah.
Anyhow, well, on that happy note, hey, Ian, tell us about your story.
Oh, my story is an interesting one today. So we've moved. A company has decided to pivot, and I decided I look that word up in the Kagi translator between English and LinkedIn speak. And I think it's appropriate to say that in their particular translation of Pivot to English, we're completely fucked. And we are desperately trying something else before the money runs out. That does seem like it's a seem apophatic. So perfectly successful shoe company that many celebs wear.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've been very popular for years and years. I've decided that they're going to get out of the shoe market and become an AI CPU vendor, essentially, or a source of the new bird AI they're going to become. And so they're going to be a data center. But I can't see how you get from footwear to data centers and data center full of on demand available GPUs for your AI workload.
I can tell you how. It's very easy. What the people working in data centers do all day? They walk. Because they're walking from server to server. What do they need to walk? They need very comfortable and high performance trainers, right?
Well, then maybe they should have kept making shoes.
There's your connection.
I think the way you get from shoes to AI is through bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm. That's a better story than mine.
The company completely failed, right? They went out of business.
It
says here.
Oh, go ahead, Ian, because you're probably going to read the thing I was about to read out of the article.
It's clearly a stock meme, is what someone's saying. They're hopefully boosting there. They've said, look, this thing popular. Therefore, people buy their stocks and all of a sudden it helps them. Yeah. And so, yay!
Yeah. But you know what it shows? Say, Jeff? It shows you can just put AI. This is the button. Yeah, that too. This is the bubble at work, right? You can put AI on anything and people will invest and people will buy it. It doesn't even matter what it is. You could buy a loaf of bread and say, I'll put AI in this loaf of bread, and people would be like, oh yeah, let's buy that.
Yeah.
For a gazillion dollars, because why not? It's an AI bread now.
All right, there's another line in this article that I will just read. Branding consultant Wecon from Conduit Asia likened the move to a liquidation rather than a pivot. Using the stock market shell of its shoe brand to move into an unrelated business. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a liquidation.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. It is. Is there an investment company behind it, like a PE? Because that would kind of make sense.
But they got they got bought by another shoe company, I think, got sold.
Yeah, and there's also a bit down. The stock market value had plummeted from a high of more than $500 a share to around $250 just before the AI pivot was announced. The announcement then gives new.
You mean
AI
25, not 250.
A shell to trade on. $2.50.
Yeah, okay, that makes more sense.
$2.50.
Yeah, not $250.
And then went up. Yeah, and then went up from $3 to $17. But as it says here, but that doesn't restore the $4 billion lost in destroyed value.
Nope.
It does sound like desperation of what can we do? AI, there's a bandwagon. Let's go jump on it.
Mm-hmm.
It has all of the hallmarks of bandwagon jumping.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think based on what I read in other places, I don't think that Allbirds was ever actually a very profitable company. I think they always struggled. They were kind of a meme anyway. Yes. They were definitely overhyped.
Yes. I mean, for sure. Really, I don't know. I would have to look at their financials to really tell.
What does this article say?
Yeah, I mean, let's have a quick glance here. Allbirds Inc. Me neither, because one, they didn't have like cute shoes in my size, but two, because I also kind of didn't like the design.
In this article says the company struggled to turn a profit since it listed on NASDAQ 5 years ago.
Let's see. Revenue and profit performance. Annual. Yeah. Yeah, they've, I mean, at least since 2021, they've been negative. I mean, let me go into the financials. It's been
Which
definitely
about a while. When they went public.
Yeah.
So they've basically never been a good business.
Yeah, they've had a couple of quarters where they hit earnings and where they were not too bad, but overall then their margin was like bad.
Right.
I mean, last like 2025 margin was a net margin minus 50.69%.
Wow.
Ouch.
So, yeah, yes.
That's bad.
Something had to happen.
All right. So, if they're going or if they are pivoting into AI, that means that the entire infrastructure they have for their product, they have to throw out and start over.
Oh, I don't think they had a lot of infrastructure. I mean, I don't think they produced their own shoes. So, I mean, what are they changing? Marketing can keep if they ever had it.
Yeah, it's going to be contracting China that makes them, won't it? Let's face it.
Exactly. So.
So, all right. Well, then what are they planning on doing now? They're just going to buy some AWS time and spin up some Kubernetes and and call themselves an AI company?
Yeah.
They take all the Windows machines they used in the back office and they put them in parallel.
But I have to
see. With a load of video cards in them and hope for the best.
But I have to say, they're stock price chart looks really funny. It's like basically flat, slightly going down until April 14th, and it jumps up to like what you said, like 17 almost. And it's down to 12 already because of people realizing that this is bullshit. So
I'm guessing somebody made some money.
Oh, 100%.
So the purpose, the whole point of doing this is not about AI. It's about putting money into somebody's pocket. It's like, what was that? GameStop, right? Remember GameStop?
GameStop.
If you invested,
like, I don't know. I mean, if you bought, let's say, 1,000 shares at 250.
$4,000.
Yeah.
$5,000.
No, it's worth. It was worth at the peak $17,000, so you made about $14,000-$15,000 in 5 minutes.
A day.
As I said, it's. Yeah, but who could have predicted that? That's always the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. All time minus 97%. So. Yes.
Yeah. Well, okay. I guess our opportunity to buy, what was it? Allwing?
Allbirds
shoes. We missed that window.
Yeah. And I think you also missed the window on Allbirds AI, whatever it's called, because this is going to be gone in 5 seconds.
Right.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah. Well, then, Tom, you always bring the super high-tech stories. So tell us about your super high-tech story.
I brought a very high-tech story that I don't really understand the details of. I'm going to say that up front. But I think it's hopefully an indication of what's going to happen in the future. So the article is about researchers at Google that talk about something called TurboQuant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically a compression algorithm basically to reduce memory and increase performance of, I guess, vector operations is the best way to say it, which is involved in AI inference, I guess, not
yes.
training side.
Yeah, you do a lot of quantization, especially if you want to get models smaller, smaller and a little bit more efficient, you might do that.
Right. Yeah. And I think for me, for AI to really, really stick and be practical over the long term, I don't think we can have, you know, a gazillion gigawatt data centers all over the world. That we have to get better at more efficient and the computing side. Maybe we'll still need the data centers, but they'll be able to do much, much more.
Yeah.
So this is just a paper.
Look at our history.
This is just a paper, and it's a paper from research guys, so take it for what it's worth.
Yeah, but it's interesting.
Their claim is they can reduce memory by about 6x and increase performance around 8x. And of course, you have to understand what they're comparing to and all that kind of stuff. And again, it's a research paper. But I think that's a start. 6x memory reduction and 8x performance, that's pretty good.
6x memory with today's memory prices is a lot.
Yeah, right. Think of how many Allbirds you could buy with that.
Yeah, especially right now at like zero, basically. Yes.
But I have in the back of my mind that whoever figures out the biggest winner in AI is going to be the companies that figure out how to vastly improve the efficiency of the computational side of it.
That's already happening.
Models and all that stuff.
That's already happening. I mean, there's a lot of focus on OpenAI and, I mean, mostly OpenAI and Anthropic, right? So there's a couple, side players with Claude and so on. But like those are the two big ones that people talk about. There is a plethora of models that are, depending on the task a little bit, but they are sometimes on par or better than the best models, which usually is Anthropic's models.
That are much smaller.
Are much smaller, much more efficient, much cheaper to operate, and so on. So as I said, it depends a little bit on the task. They're not always as general as the others, but they're for the task much better. This is happening. I mean, DeepSeek was the big shock that like the world saw, where like, okay, someone can basically. I mean, if you believe what the Chinese government or that the researchers said don't matter, in reality, it was quite a good model for much cheaper. So, and that was kind of the one that most people know. There is Minimax, there is the Qwen models and so on. There's a lot. And I'm constantly trying new models because there's always a new interesting one.
There are many components of improving efficiency, and certainly there's been a lot of work on models, and I think getting to more domain specific models is certainly a way to go. If you're doing AI for medical research, get a model that's focused on medical research. You don't need some big general model, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's in general.
But I think there's also just on the algorithms and on the computational side, no matter what model you have, we need some improvement.
Oh, 100%. I mean, if you really look at it, all the models, they're not increasing in size or in model size itself anymore. It's more going towards orchestration. It's going towards combining multiple things together, tooling around
what
it.
What DeepSeek did, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, DeepSeek. The improvement from DeepSeek was on the training side. Right? Mm-hmm. That was the big thing.
Yeah, because so it's so cheap to train. Relatively speaking, it was still expensive, but very cheap to train. It was some podcast recently I listened to. Maybe it was Plain English. Where they talked about the models are not improving as much anymore. They're still improving, but the speed has slowed down, which is a normal thing, right? That always happens until someone figures out another way to make it faster again. Like maybe this is what one part or make it better, and then you have a jump again. But usually that's what happens. Like the speed simply slows down. Like we had it with CPUs. Like eventually it slows down. So it has to. It's just, I would say, physics almost. But the improvements around it in orchestration and tooling and all of them made more than up for that slowdown. So that's why we saw the massive improvements on the Anthropic side or whatever. It wasn't that the model itself had been gotten that much better. It was that everything around it pushed the efficiency up that much. using the model better, simply.
Right. Right. And, so, and Anthropic was nice enough to release all their source code so we could see how they did it.
Exactly. How they sometimes so nice did weird things. That was super nice of them, yes. Yeah. So TurboQuant, I mean, yes, it's a research paper, but I mean, almost everything starts with a research paper. So,
got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is cool. Like quantization is, especially for smaller models on local devices. Like if you're running like a model on your phone, on your Mac, on your Windows machine, whatever, chances are it's a quantized model because it's just otherwise it wouldn't fit in. Like I think what I've seen a GPT model was like a couple hundred gigabytes, I think, to really fully, if you run the full model, to run that. If you use a quantized model, it's just smaller. So makes sense.
That's the other thing. Right? Yeah, that's the other thing that I think is going to be important too, that being able to run more and more on your local device, AI stuff on your local device, not everything, but more and more of it is going to be a big step too.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yep,
I agree.
It is. And we're already seeing, I mean, a lot of people are starting to experiment with local models, and it's just...
Right.
It's not the same yet, but it's great. So, means probably we need my story. I'm still debating.
Yes.
Do we want to... I'll open it up to the floor. Do we want to talk about Artemis, or do we want to talk about an AI-run retail store?
I've heard the retail story.
You know, I'm leaning towards Artemis just because it's such a cool thing.
Okay, then let's do that. Then let's do that because we talked AI already today. So there's a really interesting blog post from what's his name now?
Michael Tsai.
Michael Tsai, thank you. I was like, what was his name again? But he kind of it links out to kind of two articles. One is on Hacker News, and the other one, I don't remember where that was. I think it was also a blog post. America Space, about the processors and the flight FCMs. What is that? Flight control machine? Flight computers? Whatever. The flight computers. Let's call it that.
The flight computers.
Yeah. Like how basically how they build a fault tolerant system, because you know it's kind of in space especially you have to deal with radiation a lot, and yes, they are radiation hardened, so welcome to 2002 because that's how old the CPUs are. Literally the CPUs from 2002, it was used in Apple computers in the iBook 3 D3 until 2005. So about a 20 year old CPU that is running, actually multiple, right? Because it's a lot of them. It's not just one. But how they basically built a system that could deal with any kind of fault, or could deal with most faults at least, that would come up without interfering with the operations, right? Because I mean, it would be kind of bad. Oh, there's a fault. Let's show a blue screen because you're in the middle of a burn, right? That would be a little bit a problem. That would be bad. Or, I mean, the even worse option is like, oh, it just, I don't know, some bit flips somewhere and it just changes some value and doesn't even recognize it, right? That would also be bad. So they basically built they didn't just build a redundant system, vehicle management computer, VMC, with two flight control modules. That's what SCM stands for, that's in here. So basically they built not just a redundant system, because that's normal, right? You have multiple systems, and if one of them, like, for some reason goes offline, then you're like, okay, let's just switch over and continue there. They built a self-checking pair of processors. So each one of the redundant systems has two FCMs. So 8 CPUs running the software in parallel, and really running them in parallel, and hinging on a fail silent design. So basically they ensure that if one of the CPUs performs something that's wrong, a calculation to usually radiation or vibration or whatever else it could be, the error is detected and it responds. And the response is usually, it just doesn't say anything, right? I mean, if it's supposed to send a value, but it detects an error, it will just not say anything, which is better, instead of sending a wrong value or sending an error or something. Because you still have the other two that also do that. I mean, worst case, both of them at the same time, or actually both of them at the same time don't respond, but I think that's usually quite unlikely because it's not that they fail all the time. So that was kind of interesting because it simplifies this. Usually you have a voting system. It's like, oh, everybody sends in their vote and then you see what's the consensus, and that takes time, right? Because you have to basically elect the right answer. And in a real-time system like a flight computer, it's a little bit too slow. Yeah, it's a little bit too slow.
It's a really interesting method for fault tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're basically kind of grading the inputs over time constantly. So I worked one of my first jobs in semiconductor was working on it was a company called Trilogy, and this is in 1984. They were trying to put a complete computer system CPU on not a die, but a whole wafer.
Mm-hmm.
The whole 8-inch wafer was one chip.
Mm-hmm.
It was a crazy idea that never worked. And one of the reasons it didn't work was because on a whole wafer, you have many defects.
Mm-hmm.
And so every circuit we put on there, we made three of them. Every circuit was triplicated.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of every circuit, we had a circuit called a voter.
Mm-hmm.
And it would take the answer of the best two out of three of each of those.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty typical voting mechanism.
Yeah, this is 40.
Yeah.
40 some years ago.
42 years almost.
42 years ago, but it was brain dead. It had no intelligence this at all.
Yeah, I mean, this is also not intelligent, right? This is just also just algorithms and chips and so on, design, hardware, software, all of that.
Yeah, I guess intelligent. Yeah. It's a more sophisticated.
Yeah, for sure.
Method, I guess.
Yeah,
it's more sophisticated.
Exactly. It does a priority ordered source selection. That's the algorithm. So the computers will be silent if they detect a fault. And then there's priority order. So if the first one is silent, it just moves on to the second one and so on. So they self-correct, basically.
So I wonder if you do a simulation, somehow you can simulate various realistic faults that could happen in the FCM.
Oh, I bet they did.
And if they prove that this method, this silent fail method, mm-hmm. was more robust than like a triplicated voter system.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would assume so because I mean, every module had two CPUs, so they would check each other and make sure that internally that there were no faults. And if they detected something, they were just like, okay, let's just not say anything. And then the other three can still continue. So, I mean, you have basically three redundancies, four systems. So that is, I think, cool. quite interesting. Yeah. And there was also a independent backup flight software system that they could
just in case,
which is a dissimilar redundancy. So that's also something that, I mean, people don't think about. Like those four flight computers, flight control modules are the same, right? They're all the same chips and the same setup, whatever. So what if in your design you have a mistake, right? That could happen.
So they have an entirely different system.
Yeah. Different hardware, different operating system, independently developed. It's a simpler software, but that's fine because, I mean, that's an edge case of an edge case where you're like, okay, fine. We'll switch over to that and use that and it's going to be fine.
I wonder if that system used a Z80 processor.
Probably. I mean, I would assume so, because I mean, what would you use for that? Like a backup system. Right. You want something that is simple and super reliable. Right? So maybe something you've been using the last 50 years or 30 years or something, or 20 years or whatever in aerospace already. So you're like, okay, if everything fails, that one, we know it works. Might not be as fancy, but it works.
It's the redundancy, isn't it? You've got to have redundancy upon redundancy, because it's not the sort of thing you can go back for something.
No, it's base. It's
incredible to look that you pick 20-year-old hardware because you know it works. You've tested it multiple times. It's it's predictable and reliable. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it's what you'll use.
Yeah.
You don't go and stick a load of M1 Max in there and hope for the best. You know it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Part of that is the development cycle is so long. You know, they had to make a processor choice probably 20 years ago.
Not quite.
Well, but I mean, Artemis has been going on the program since before 2010, right?
Yeah, it's about 10 years, 10, 12 years, something like that, I think. I think it's after 2010, but 2012 or something, if I remember correctly. But
yeah, so
it's been a while.
State of the art processors in 2012. You wouldn't pick the latest. So
exactly.
A generation or two behind. Yeah. So that puts you 20 years ago. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Basically. I mean, as I said, it's in general like that. The radiation hardened are usually quite a bit Mac. Because as you said, like you want something that's reliable. You want something that you figured out all the faults. Like, I mean, probably you know it's best. No CPU has no faults, right? There's always something.
Right.
But you just want to know about it. If you know that it's going to behave a certain way, you can work around that.
Yeah, and the radiation hardened means that PowerPC chip. It's a different design. I mean, it's the architecture of PowerPC, but it's not the same chip. It's an entirely different version.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I said, like, that's why I think like they use usually older CPUs. Like, simply.
Well, and that's a pretty simple CPU too, right?
Yeah.
Relatively speaking.
True.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is iBooks in space.
Yes. iBooks in space. iBooks G3 in space. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Agreed. Yeah, but I mean,
running
think about
Mac
that.
OS 10?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, think about that also. Like, that was, early Mac OS 10, yeah. But like, think about the CPU power we had back then and what we have today. I think my Apple Watch might have more power.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Well, but think about how scary. It looks now when you look at the architecture of the Apollo 11.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I mean, how the hell did that thing ever work?
Your calculator today has more CPU power than that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's crazy when you think about it, isn't it? You know, the computing power of.
Yeah. Yeah.
We went to the moon with and compared to
that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the fail safe backup for Apollo 11 was slide rules, I think.
Mm hmm. By the way, the chip is an IBM PowerPC 750FX. I don't think I mentioned that. A single core processor, so it's not even multi-core. Wow. Yeah, as was normal back then.
Right. Hence, iBooks in space.
Yes.
iBooks in space.
Yeah, and I mean, think about how many cores you have in your average laptop these days. It's like, I think eight is the lower end.
Yeah. Right. Oh, good times. All right.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of good times, we get to have all these good times because Aw Technologies is here and doing their part to help support the British Tech Network. They're making sure that all of the infrastructure we need is available and the resources to do all this. It's a lot. And so we appreciate that they're here helping us make all this happen so we can live stream multiple times every single week so that we have a place for the website and the show files to live so that you can watch or listen to your favorite episodes anytime you want. Without Aw Technologies help, we wouldn't be able to do everything that we're doing. It just wouldn't happen. So we do appreciate that they are here. They can be here for you too if you need to have have remote monitoring of a construction site or some other facility where you need to be on top of what's going on, like with video cameras and other sensors, they're here for you for that. So you can show your support for them, and it's a way of saying thank you to them by using Odd Technologies when you need those services. So head over to their website, Odd Technologies, that's A-W-E, technologies.co.uk, and check all that out. I mean, if nothing else, you're going to see some cool photos. And since Ewan Rankin is also a great photographer, you know you're going to see good photos. So go check out the photos too. And thanks, Odd Technologies, for being here for us. Also here for us, behind the scenes, I'd say an unsung hero of the British Tech Network, but I point it out all the time. So sung, but sung poorly because it's me. Patrice, thank you for everything you've done to modernize our whole live stream, live chat system. Yes, I know it's been a few years. But what we had before, it was like we might as well have been running the whole thing on
a bunch of Mac minis.
On an old iPhone.
Well, we kind of were, so.
Because we were running on a bunch of Mac minis, and
Skywall was a big bunch of Mac minis.
And see, Skype isn't even a thing anymore.
No.
Wow. Yeah. Anyhow, Patrice, I do like calling out everything that you've done because it is a lot. And then I immediately turn around after praising you and say, can you help me out and tell people about the live chat, please?
I can. Easy. Thank you. So for all the listeners that are listening to this in the recorded form, we do live stream this thing, as you might have guessed by this introduction by Jeff. And all you have to do is head over to live.britishtechnetwork.com every Thursday, 7 p.m. UK time. Whatever that is in your time zone, you will have to figure out. There's apps for that. Simply ask your LLM or your voice assistant. It will tell you. And that's it. There's no registration, no ads, no nothing. It's super easy. That's why we have our own system and don't rely on third parties. Thanks to all technologies for doing that. So, or allowing that to happen. Enabling that. There's a live chat next to it. So you know the layout. Video on the left, chat on the right, start typing. Generates funny names. You can change the name if you want. Change it to Jeff Gamet if you want. No, actually you can't because that one is registered. But you could have Jeff's Pants as a name. It's not a
you
problem.
You could.
Not a problem.
I mean, I'm not using them.
Exactly. You're not using them. That's it. There is a transcript if you want to get to the links that we talked about during the show, like all the new stories and sometimes extra bits and pieces that we mention, we'll just throw in. I'll probably throw in the AI market thing because that was fun in a second. And we have a transcript on britishtechnetwork.com/chat that you can go to and then grab the links. And just pick today's date in the calendar, which is April, day after tax day in the US, April 16th, 2026. April 16th, 2026. That is the date for today's show.
Awesome. Thank you for doing that, Patrice.
You're welcome.
All right. It is now time to do some cool things. Ian, you have the first cool thing. I clicked on the link, and sad trombone, I was promptly greeted with an alert saying that BBC player... iPlayer is not available in my region.
I guess you have to
I'm
move,
sure
Jeff.
They have a VPN that can res.
Yeah.
Either move over here or get a VPN, one or the other.
Yeah. But moving is better.
What I'm linking to is a wonderful TV series called Small Profits. I'm sure it'll be coming to another streaming service near you somewhere. It was created by a guy called Mackenzie Crook, who did, if anyone saw The Detectorists, which was another BBC comedy, wistful kind of car. So it's a guy who lives on his own. And he discovers a world of magic from his dad, who's who otherwise you wouldn't expect. His dad's Michael Palin. Just to give you an idea of the cast going on here. That's
okay.
Michael Palin. This guy's Paxton Quigley. He's got, and the other sort of supporting cast. But his dad kind of gets the impression, you kind of get the impression his daddy's got, he's in a home, he's got Alzheimer's, but he grew three
homunculi.
Three genies in a bottle, let's say. Homunculi, genies in a bowl, thank you. And so the story goes through his trying to do this and what happens and all of the story around it. It's beautifully shot, beautifully written, funny, sad, and all the good things you want from a short TV series of six episodes. We lapped it up over several nights and had a lot of fun watching it. I recommend it. If you can find some way to get yourself to watch it, I'm not sure where else you can see it. I did think there was a couple of other, when I was Googling this, that there were some other places. Amazon, apparently.
Yeah, you can buy it on Amazon and Apple TV. If you want to just stream it civilized people like you, Ian.
No, uncivilized people.
You have to use a VPN. It's what I'm seeing in all the articles. Everyone's saying, just VPN.
VPN, I recommend it highly. It's a nice thing.
All right.
It's a cool thing.
Yeah.
It's not just
that's
a nice
that's
thing.
Very
it's
cool.
A cool thing.
Okay, Patrice, it is your turn.
My turn? Okay. So I kind of told you last week already that this week I would pick this show since I picked the music for the show. I did it for some reason reverse. Instead of the show first and then the music, I just love the music. I still do. I still listen to it all the time. The show is Paradise. So, a really fun show. I've watched both seasons by now. There's two seasons out. There's a third coming, so it's not canceled, which is always a good thing. You never know. It is on Hulu in the US, and I think maybe in the US also Disney Plus, but definitely internationally Disney Plus. So the story, without spoiling anything, so it's kind of, let's say, post-apocalyptic sci-fi, I could say, but it starts out really, like, you don't know what's going on. So it starts out, like, there's a typical American, like, small city, tons of wealthy people with their mansions, and then there is a murder. Turns out the person murdered is the president of the United States. And his Secret Service bodyguard comes under suspicion. But there is more going on than you think. And what I really like about this show is every season, it is a continuing story, but every season has kind of their own plot, their own thing. What is this about? So it's not like the story simply continues end to end. It's more like, okay, this season is about this part and the next season is about this. I said, I don't want to give away what happened. So I'm vague on for a reason because the reveal is kind of the part of the fun. The music, as I said last week, is ridiculous, but also the acting. I'm freaking in love with, the main actor, Sterling K. Brown. Plays the Secret Service agent, but also his superior / nemesis, maybe, Julia Nicholson as Samantha Sinatra. There's also you've probably seen her in other shows. Sarah Shahi, I think, is her. How you pronounce her last name? She plays a psychiatrist. It's just overall a really great cast. In season two there is what's her name, Shailene Woodley, I think. I'm butchering names right now. She's in season two, which is part of the reason why I even like wanted to watch this, because I'm a big fan of hers. She has a couple episodes in the second season, also great. It's just super super interesting, and there's a third season coming and I'm super excited, and I don't know where this is going because I have a feeling it's gonna change completely again. It's kind of, cool. It's hard to explain that, but it's kind of like every season is their own little show, but they have a common storyline and theme. But you could easily do a show multiple seasons with like everything they did in the first season, everything they did in the second season is another show and so on. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's kind of like that, which makes it like you don't know what's coming.
All right, very
and that
cool.
makes it interesting. Yeah, cool show. Highly recommend it. I hope it wins all the awards because it absolutely deserves it.
And it is available on Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. So I guess I need to add this to my shows to watch.
You absolutely do.
Okay.
It's on, this one's on Hulu?
Hulu or Disney Plus. Either one will work for you. Both seasons.
Yep. Cool. Okay, Tom, it's your turn.
Okay, my cool thing is a movie. It's a movie called Steve, and it stars Cillian Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
The other famous person is Tracy Ullman. Yeah. There's a couple actors I recognize from other shows like Broadchurch and so on.
Ooh.
It's not a light movie. It's described in IMDb as a psychological drama. It's definitely a drama.
With Cillian Murphy, it's great, kind of expected.
Yeah.
Great story, great actors. It's a story about a teacher, Steve, who's Cillian Murphy, who teaches at a kind of a unique school for troubled kids, let's say, in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
That is struggling for survival, and the main character Steve is also going through some stressful times which have an effect on his mental health. So it's if you like sort of the psychological drama, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting, and I know when I watch it I was totally engaged. When the movie finished, I had to think for a while and talk with my wife, was that a good movie or not? And we decided it was definitely a good movie. A little bit disturbing, but it's not like over the top with throwing bad shit in your face. So it's mostly about a good story,
like
interaction
movie,
of people. It's a good movie.
A movie, if you like that, a movie I'd recommend you see is one called I Swear. It's about a UK Tourette's campaigner and basically his life story and his challenges to get heard and be taken seriously when his Tourette's would make him basically swear his head off when he didn't mean to. It won BAFTAs this year and in the awards over here. It's called I Swear. It's on Netflix. It's on Netflix over there, I have no idea, but it's on Netflix and it's very nice. It's not my... not my favorite movie, I must admit, but my wife loves it, and I can see why. It's not my kind of thing, but it is a lovely film.
So it's not about the president.
No, it's not about a president or anything like that. It does nothing, but nothing. No one gets shot. Nothing blows up.
Okay.
No car chases. I'm bored already. But my wife loved it, and I was made to sit through it. And I can see the I can see how nice it is, but
you're not selling it.
I'm the. I know. But the thing is,
you are not.
My film niche involves superheroes, action, car chases, people getting shot, and things like this. That doesn't happen in Scotland. There's a guy who swears a lot.
Nope.
It's quite funny, but that's about it. You know, and it's fascinating seeing his journey of where he comes from, where he gets to. It's good in some ways. It's very funny.
All right. Cool. Okay, so my cool thing, Patrice, I took inspiration from you because you brought music last week.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm bringing music this week, and I'm bringing music that I'm betting none of you have heard. So this is an artist, Hazel Miller. She is local to Colorado, but she does have a nationwide presence. And... she does jazz and blues and R&B, and she has a wonderful voice. And I have seen her perform live many times because she's very local. She plays at the local events around around the area. So like in the summers, Boulder does a thing called Bands on the Bricks, which is they set up a bandstand on Pearl Street Mall, and everyone can just come for free. And they always have one night where it's Hazel Miller. And that's the night that that you'll be lucky to get near the bandstand because so many people will be there.
It's a really funny story. Like what I just saw it, what is written about her in Apple Music. It's like she was from Louisville and she wanted to relocate to LA, and her rental car rental truck broke down in Denver, and so she stayed.
And we got lucky because her rental truck broke down.
Yeah.
And her music is really great, and she puts on a fantastic live show. And she's a very sweet person. I've met her on several occasions as well, and she's just this down to earth, sweet, very gracious person. So I am giving everyone the Apple Music link, but if you go to Spotify and search for Hazel Miller, her stuff comes up there as well.
Very cool.
And YouTube. Yeah. She's got a lot of stuff all over YouTube.
Oh, yep. So she is very easy to find. Whatever music service you want to use, you'll be able to find her. If you're into physical media, she does have albums out there as well. I have never seen any of them in person, but I know they're out there. So if you want to buy one off of Amazon, you can absolutely do that.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking, like, what music service would I check? That's crazy. But okay.
Yeah. So anyhow, Hazel Miller. And for those of you that are outside the United States, you're in for a special treat, and now you have a link directly to Hazel Miller because you know me through the show.
Very cool. Jeff is famous anyway, so
in a very small pond. Very
small, relative
small pond. That's true. Yep. All 10 fish in the pond are like, oh, we know Jeff.
And you can't.
Yeah. So, all right, it is now time to wrap this whole thing up. Patrice, where can people find you?
Every week here, almost every week here on The Big Show on Thursdays and The Mac Show on Fridays. So also tomorrow, be out next week because I'm in Berlin. But other than that, I'm usually here. Everything I'm doing, social media links, podcasts, projects, cool things. There's an entire page of all the cool things that I've picked since late 2019. You can find all of that on my website. ThePatrice.com will take you there. And Jeff and I have a really cool TV show podcast, since we talked about movies and TV shows at the end. It's very apropos. Retro Rewatch. We rewatch retro TV shows, and retro means right now. Stargate SG-1, which is 26-ish years old, as far as we are with season 4 right now. Season 4, episode 8 was released last week of Stargate SG-1, which is the first ones. And Scorched Earth is coming up tomorrow.
Awesome.
And I want to mention something. If you have a Vision Pro, I know this is probably not the audience for it, but maybe you do, and you're into flying or pilot kind of things, I have a hangout coming up tomorrow night at, well, it's 2300 Zulu, which is whatever that is in your time zone. It's 1 p.m. my time, GMT plus 2. So join us there.
Cool. Tom, when you're not hanging out with Patrice wearing your Vision Pro, because of course.
Of course.
Where can people find you?
People can find me on Mastodon. I am Tom F at sfba.social.
Awesome. All right, very Ian, cool. Your turn. Where can people find you?
Me, you can find me on LinkedIn as usual, and sometimes on our Slack, in our Slack room on Slack. Those are the best of the BTN Slack room. That's the other place you can find me usually. I'm not prolific on the world of social medias. I'm a bit of a social media hermit nowadays.
Yeah. There are probably so many other more productive places to put your energy.
Yes, that's the way I look at it.
Yep. And then there's me, where I'm just pouring all of my energy into whatever. Jay Gamut on all the social medias, mostly active on Mastodon, Pixelfit, and Blue Sky. Then for shows, Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live, Dave Ginsberg's In Touch with iOS, here on the British Tech Network for the Big Show and the Mac Show. Brian Chaffin and I do the Context Machine. By the way, we just started a weekly newsletter for the Context Machine. So if you want to sign up, go to contextmachine.io, and there's a newsletter option in the menu at the top of the page, and you can sign up. And then Patrice and I, she just told everyone about Retro Rewatch. And if you check out the show, and you should, what you'll see is that Patrice is very meticulous and organized, and I have no sense of linear time. So go check out Retro Rewatch. And Mac Stock is coming up in July. And I'm speaking at Mac Stock, and I now have a discount code for everyone. So if you're going to go to Mac Stock, but you haven't bought your pass yet, use my code, which is DigiWizard. There's no dashes or anything in it. It's just DigiWizard. And you're going to get $50 off your pass. And that works for the regular pass. And also, if you're signing up for the eCam workshop, which is the day before the regular conference, if you bundle that in, you still get your $50 off. Hey. So use my code, sign up. And all right, I'm done doing Jeff commercials now. Thank you to the three of you for just being awesome, wonderful friends and being here with me today. I'm so glad we get to spend this time together. I know I say that every week. It's not just words. It's true. I am so happy we all get to spend this time together. And everyone that's watching, listening live, participating in the live chat, thank you to all of you for being here. And if you watch or listen to the show recordings later, thank you for being part of this as well. Ewan, thanks for being you. Muller, thank you for making sure there are people for shows. Odd Technologies, thank you for being here and supporting us. And I think I hit everything. So now it's okay for me to say, join us tomorrow for the Mac Show. Come back again next Thursday for the Big Show. And everyone have an awesome weekend.